This morning, my mind has turned to a passage in the Old Testament book of Proverbs. If you have a Bible this morning, I invite you to join me in, if you will, in the 31st chapter of Proverbs as we speak on the priceless gem of a godly wife and mother. I want us to look at Proverbs 31, verse 10 as our text. Who can find a virtuous woman? For her price is far above rubies. She is more valuable than priceless treasures. She's more rare than a diamond or a ruby. Now this chapter, the last chapter in the book of Proverbs, records the wise counsel that King Lemuel's mother gave to him, probably as he was a young man about to embark on life. Listen to the first verse. The words of King Lemuel, the prophecy that his mother taught him. King Lemuel's mother was a very wise woman. She gave him some very good advice. In fact, the counsel she gives him in this 31st chapter can be summarized in three main points. Verses 3 through 7, she cautions this young son of hers against the excesses of sexual promiscuity and alcohol abuse. Verses 3 through 7, she says, "Son, stay away from indulging your passions. Watch out for the dangers of alcoholism." That's good advice for a parent to give a child, a mother to give a son. In verses 8 and 9, she encourages him to defend the defenseless and stand up for the poor and the underprivileged. Now, he was going to be a king, and she says to him in verse 8 of Proverbs 31, "Open thy mouth for the dumb." That is, speak for the speechless, people who can't speak for themselves. I think of little infants before they see the light of day in their mother's womb. Somebody needs to speak up for those who can't speak for themselves. Defend the defenseless. "Open thy mouth for the dumb and for the cause of all such as are appointed to destruction." If someone is being taken advantage of, she says, "Son, you're going to be the king. You stand up for them." That's good advice. Defend the defenseless. Stand up for the poor and the underprivileged. She says in verse 9, "Plead the cause of the poor and the needy." So she says, "Son, control your passions. Son, take up for the underprivileged." And then in verses 10 and following, the bulk of the chapter, she counsels him concerning the importance of marrying a godly and virtuous wife. Who can find a virtuous woman? For her price is far above rubies. Her value is more precious than gold and silver and diamonds. She says, "Son, I want you to look hard and find a virtuous woman. Not just any woman, but you look for a virtuous woman." And verses 10 through 31 then in this chapter, the last chapter again of the book of Proverbs, teaches us about the great value of a God-fearing wife and mother. Now here is God's ideal for womanhood in Proverbs chapter 31. I think you would agree with me this morning, wouldn't you, that in this fallen world system in which we live, there seems to be a full-blown revolution against God and His Word. And we see that rebellion played out in many different ways, but particularly against the divine order that God has established for marriage and home and the family. We see that under assault, don't we? The family, the biblical family, is under attack today. We see gender confusion in our modern society. That's nothing more than an example of man's rebellion against God. We see the redefinition of marriage in our popular culture. We see the breakdown of the family. And there seems to be a general effort in popular culture to redefine the unique roles of males and females, the differences that God has made between men and women. Now, in the past 36 years of pastoral ministry, since I was ordained, I have taken this passage in Proverbs 31 twice as a text in a sermon, As far as I can remember, only on two occasions have I tried to preach from this chapter. I've referred to it many times over the years, but I've only taken it as a text like I have this morning on two other occasions. And on both occasions, someone has approached me at the conclusion of the service and expressed discouragement. They just felt unable to live up to this high standard. I want to say this morning, dear friends, that though it's very important to address subjects like this in a world where there's such a war against God and His Word concerning the role of women and what it means to be a female and a woman, I want to say that this passage is not in the Bible to chastise or to scold anybody by showing you how far short you fall, how far you come short of measuring up to the standard. I hope that nobody will leave here this morning discouraged, because that's not the intention at all. By the way, did you know no one, whether a man or a woman, can perfectly live up to the standard of what God's ideal is for masculinity or femininity as it's spelled out in the Bible? I certainly don't. I have much room to grow and much ground to gain yet in that dimension. And I don't believe any of us will ever perfectly attain in this world the God-given standard for human beings, whether male or female. So we're not aiming at perfection this morning. We're aiming, my friends, at authenticity. I'm not talking about whether you fall short. I'm not preaching on this to show the sisters here that you just don't quite measure up. I'm talking about the importance of sincerity, authenticity. We're not talking about your performance today. We're talking about character. Who can find a virtuous woman? And if you're a child of God here this morning, I think that every sister would want to be this person that is described in this chapter. And you say, Brother Mike, I feel like I'm far short of that. I'm not perfect. Well, again, my beloved, we're not aiming at perfection. I read an article this week in which the author said, I'm not a Hallmark mother. I'm more like the Velveteen mother, you know, instead of a Hallmark mother. You know, you see these cards to the best woman in the world, the best mother in the world, and you say, I really question whether that is true in my case. And certainly we want to express our love, but most mothers realize the frustration of that, don't they? This lady said, I'm not a Hallmark mother, and none of us really are if we tell the truth. I like her honesty. Listen to this. She says, I think back on all of the burnt dinners, the yelling mornings over lost shoes, scattered Legos, unfinished homework, and there were crumpled tears behind bathroom doors. She says, the deal is motherhood isn't sainthood. My, that's true, isn't it? And we're all just a bunch of sinners. And don't let anyone tell you any differently. A mother's labor and delivery never ends. I like that. And you never stop having to remember to breathe. She says, the stacks of dishes and the mountains of laundry and the tantrums of toddlers and teenagers and tired mamas and all the scuffed up walls down the hall and through the heart, they were all wearing down the plastic of pride, wearing us down to the real wood of grace and the cross. And she said, it really is okay that you're not perfect, because she says, homemaking is about making a home, not about perfection. You know, perfection, that ideal in a person's mind, I've got to be perfect. There's not a one of us who will ever attain that in this world. You say, Brother Mike, I come from a dysfunctional family. Welcome to the club. In fact, every family is dysfunctional since Adam and Eve transgressed the law of God in the Garden of Eden. Isn't that right? There's not a perfect family here this morning. And you say, oh, my mother, she was an angel. Well, many mothers are always harping about something, aren't they? You say, well, my mother was perfect. No, my friend, she would probably be the first to tell you she wasn't. So we're not trying to canonize mothers here today and say that they're saints, as someone who should be worshiped and revered. There's not a human being, mother, father, child, man, woman, boy, girl, in this world that deserves to be worshiped. We're not here to worship mothers. We're here to see what God, what His biblical pattern is for femininity. and to encourage the sisters to try to model this as much as possible, but at the same time, to be thankful that God is a God of grace, and that what matters is not that you achieve it perfectly, but what matters is that your heart is right, and you know that God spreads His mercy and His grace upon your life so that somehow, in spite of our own misgivings and imperfections, our children survive and they turn out halfway decent. And aren't we thankful for that in our lives? Now, who can find a virtuous woman? If you're a mother here, may I say, and you have a son, this is good advice for you to give to your son, just like King Lemuel's mother gave to him in Proverbs 31. She says, "Son, be careful that you control your passions. Don't indulge the desire for personal pleasure or parties. And be sure that you take up for the underdog. Stand up for those who can't stand up for themselves. And son, the most important thing you can do in life is to choose a godly and an excellent wife, because she will either make or break you in your life." Now, my beloved, that's certainly true, isn't it? You know, when God saw that Adam was alone in the garden, He said, "It's not good that the man should be alone." Of all the things that God made, and He said it was good and very good, here's the first thing that was not good: that the man needed a complement. The man needed a helper. The man needed a counterpart, somebody to complete him. "It is not good that the man should be alone. I will make him a help that is meet or fit or suitable for him." And I believe, my friends, that God has been matchmaking companions who are suitable. He's been sending wives to help menfolk through this world so that they balance each other, they complete each other, they fulfill each other. That's God's pattern and God's plan for marriage. And as a rule for humanity in this world, that's why Proverbs chapter 16 says, "He that findeth a wife findeth a good thing and obtaineth favor from the Lord." Did you know if God has blessed you with a godly companion, a virtuous wife, or a faithful husband, then He has shown His favor upon your life. What a blessing it is that you don't have to go through this world alone, but that He has sent you a helper. And that, no doubt, is a prayer for many young people. Lord, show me the person. Lord, send me somebody to spend my life with in this world. And that is the basis of all morality in society, the marriage covenant. God gave Eve to Adam in marriage, and He said that this is the foundation now for a just and moral society. Everything depends upon the stability of the home. Did you know the home is the first institution that God ordained? Even before He ordained the church, even before He ordained government, God established the home. "For this cause shall a man leave his father and his mother and shall cleave unto his wife, and they twain shall be one flesh." So our text says today, my friends, that if you found a virtuous woman, she is a rare treasure and one of God's choicest gifts to you in this world. You say, what is the choicest gift? Well, I think the choicest gift God could give is salvation or forgiveness of your sins, a home in heaven. He's given us justifying grace, regenerating grace. That's the best gift, salvation, eternal life. But you know, there are many gifts God gives to us in this world. As we pass through this world, my beloved, aren't you glad that He's given many of us a loving and a godly companion with which to share life's treasures? And if you find a virtuous woman, the text says she's a gem more precious than rubies. Who can find a virtuous woman? For her price, that is, her value, is far above rubies. Now, I want to work through this passage and make three main points. First, let's talk about her principal virtue, then her primary orientation, and then finally, her priceless reward. First of all, her principal virtue. And what is it that makes her so virtuous? That word virtuous means excellent. Who can find a woman that is a woman of virtue? What is her principal character trait? I think you'll answer that question by looking at the 30th verse. If you're following in the 31st chapter of Proverbs, listen to verse 30. Here is the principal characteristic of this woman that makes her special. "Favor is deceitful," he says, "and beauty is vain, but a woman that feareth the Lord, she shall be praised." Favor means elegance or grace. Here's a lady that has gone to Miss Manners School of Etiquette, or Emily Post's course on manners. And she says, I'm elegant, I'm gracious, I know how to walk, I know how to conduct myself in public, I know which side of the plate the fork goes on, and so forth and so on. And there's nothing wrong with learning that. But he says that that's not what you're looking for in a wife, young man. Favor is deceitful. That is, a person may have good manners because they've been refined and taught classical style, but yet their heart may not be right. Favor is deceitful. And beauty is vain. Now, by the way, if you're a young man here today, I know that you like pretty girls, but I want you to know that every pretty girl here is going to look like the rest of us before too many more years pass. Did you know that? You say, Brother Mike, oh man, I was a handsome young man when I was young. And my question is always, well, what happened to you? And the answer is the same thing that happened to me. You say, oh, I was a lovely young lady. But you know, age takes its toll on us all, doesn't it? You see, our bodies break down. The Bible says in the 40th chapter of Isaiah, all flesh is grass. And the glory of man is like the flower, like the fading flower of the field. It blooms today, but it's short-lived, and it's not long before it's wilting. That's what physical beauty is. Favor is deceitful, that is, elegance will fool you. And beauty is vain. It's empty because it doesn't last long. But here's what matters. But a woman that fears the Lord, you know what matters more than carcass? Character. What matters more than appearance? The heart. He says, but a woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. My beloved, I want to say that's her principal virtue. She fears God. You know what you want to look for, young man, in a wife? Look for somebody not who looks good in an outfit, or not somebody who is well refined and has good manners, but primarily what you want to look for is somebody who has a God-fearing heart. And we could say the same thing about a man. What matters in a man is not his muscles, his brawn, or his brains, but what matters in a man, dear friends, is his character, his heart. And if you're a woman here today, I want to say what matters more than anything else is that your heart is a God-fearing heart. A woman that fears the Lord, she shall be praised. Now, what does it mean to fear the Lord? I think we could define it in several ways. First of all, it means she's reverent. She takes God seriously. You know, some people just trifle with God. They think God is somebody you talk about on Sunday, but you don't think about him at any other point in the course of the week. But this woman takes God seriously. She knows that he's real. She's aware of his presence, that he's watching, he's with her, and that her life must be lived reverently as if she's living it coram Deo before the face of God. To fear the Lord means that she has a sensitive conscience to God's word, to God's moral law. She's careful. She thinks before she acts, will the Lord be pleased with this? That's what it means to fear God. Do you know that everybody doesn't fear God? Think of Abraham in the Old Testament when he went into the land of Egypt and he said that there is no fear of God in this place. He said, this place is devoid of this fear of God. And I'll tell you, there are places like that in this society, and certainly that's true of every natural person before God changes us by his sovereign grace, is that there is no fear of God before our eyes by nature. If you're a God-fearing person today, if God is more than just an abstract idea in your mind that your parents used to talk about, but if he's real to you and you know that he's watching and you better take him seriously, he's not to be played with, he's not to be toyed with. If God is real in your life and you're aware of his presence, my friends, may I say that's an evidence that God has touched your heart by his sovereign grace. Because the unregenerate man does not have the fear of God before his eyes. So a God-fearing woman is a woman who has a sensitive conscience. And that means she's going to try to do what God says. She's committed to serving and pleasing God as her life goal. She's a woman of faith and a woman of prayer. She's not afraid of the snow for her household. In other words, she laughs at the storm. This woman was not afraid because she had made provision in advance and she was trusting in the Lord. You see, the thing about this woman, she's a woman of faith and she's a woman of prayer. If you're a young lady here and you want to grow up to be the kind of person that God created you to be, I want to say that it starts in the heart. It doesn't start with your cosmetics. It doesn't start with your outfit. It doesn't start with your peer class, your group, your friends at school. It doesn't start with the kind of car you drive or the kind of grades you make in school. It starts, young person, with the person you really are deep on the inside. A woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. And she's a woman of prayer. I'm so thankful, dear friends, to have known women of prayer in my life. I believe that our churches have prospered and survived in many cases where they wouldn't have because of women of prayer. Now, I know there have been brethren who've been people of prayer and people of commitment as well through the years, but I think they're far outnumbered by the godly sisters in our churches through the years that have prayed for the pastor and prayed for the sick and prayed for the prosperity of Zion. I'm so thankful, my beloved, for women of prayer. And I want to encourage every mother here to be a woman of prayer. Pray for your children. You say, I don't know what I'm going to do with this teenager. The first thing I'd say is pray for them. I mean, deliberately spend time every day talking to God about them and say, Lord, you know I can't get through to him anymore. I can't get through to her. She won't listen. She thinks I'm an old fuddy-duddy. But Lord, I'm asking you to intervene. I'm asking you to have mercy. That's one of the great roles of parenting that has been forgotten, I'm afraid, in our modern culture. A God-fearing woman is a woman of faith and prayer. And she's a woman who lives with an attitude of humble dependence upon the Lord. God is real to her, you see. He's not some philosophical X. He's not some abstract algebraic equation that has no connection to real life. But a woman who fears the Lord is a woman who starts each day knowing that God is there, that God is watching, that God is dependable, that pleasing him is the ultimate goal in life. You see, her whole life revolves around serving the Lord instead of serving herself. Now, is that the popular idea in culture today? Do people generally think that the goal of life is to please and glorify God? Certainly not. The fact is, my beloved, that most people live for themselves, don't they? Somebody says, I want to be happy. And I want to do what I want to do. And I want to stake my claim and make my mark on the world. And I want to claim my independence. And that's the general motivation for people in our world today. But when you're looking for a wife, or when you're a mother, or you're a wife, my beloved, this is the principal virtue, a woman who fears the Lord. This is true beauty. It comes from the inside. You know, beauty is more than skin deep. You ever heard that old saying? That means Mary Kay and Estee Lauder are not the answer. Now, they don't hurt. You don't have to stop wearing them. But that's not the solution to life's problems. Beauty comes from the inside. My friends, if you found that, you brethren, if you found that in a wife, you have a priceless treasure. You have a precious gem. You've been favored by God with something very special that you ought to thank God for. Because most men folk are old clods, you know. And if it wasn't for the beauty that is brought into our lives by a God-fearing companion, who knows what we would be? Who knows where I would be today if it wasn't for my dear companion? She's brought such beauty into my life. And this is what true beauty is. True beauty comes from the inside. I like that passage in 1 Peter chapter 3, verses 3 and 4, when Peter says to the Christian women, let your adorning not be the outward adorning or plaiting the hair. Don't make your emphasis on your appearance. Now, he doesn't mean it's wrong to plait the hair or to clothe yourself. He just means it's wrong to make that your priority. He says, or don't let your emphasis be the wearing of gold or the putting on of apparel. That's not wrong to have jewelry, but that's not the principal thing. But he says, but let it be the hidden man of the heart, which is not corruptible, even the ornament of a meek and a quiet spirit. It's talking about your attitude, which is in the sight of God of great price. Her price is far above rubies. Her price, her value. This is what is truly valuable, is the heart. And by the way, dear friends, your heart is the most important part of your anatomy. That's true physically. Did you know that? How long could your body live without a kidney? Some of you maybe are living without one kidney. Maybe you have one, but your other one's gone. You say, well, I can live without a kidney. How long could you live without a finger or maybe even a limb? Or how long could you live without a gallbladder? Well, of course, you can keep living. How about your tonsils? How long could you live without your tonsils and adenoids? You can live without these things, can't you? But how long could you live without your heart? You couldn't live 1 second, dear friends. And I'll tell you, that's true spiritually as well. The most important part of your spiritual anatomy is the inward man, who you are on the inside. That's why we need to pray every day, "Oh Lord, fill me with thy hallowed presence. Jesus, come and fill me now." If he's changed your heart by divine grace, if you've had that heart transplant operation that is talked about in Colossians chapter 2, the circumcision made without hands and putting off the body of the sins of the flesh through the operation of God, God has done a work in your soul and given you a new nature. If you've had that, dear friends, the most important thing for you and me to do is to protect and to guard the heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. Once your heart starts becoming cold, once it becomes full of bitterness, once it becomes calloused with the scar tissue of past hurts, I'm telling you, dear friends, you're in trouble and I'm in trouble. Guard your heart with all diligence, as Proverbs 4:23, for out of it are the issues of life. Now, this virtuous woman is a truly beautiful person, wouldn't you say? Because it comes from the inside. Now, there are numerous other virtues that are described in Proverbs 31. Look at some of them. But I want to say this before we look at them, that every one of these other virtues is present because she fears the Lord. The reason that these things are true is because she's a godly woman deep inside. And that's why these other things are true. First of all, she's industrious. Look at verse 13. Listen to this description. She's not lazy. This virtuous woman does not sit around watching Days of Our Lives and As the World Burns and eating bonbons all day. Listen to this. She seeketh wool and flax. Now, the word seeketh means she's searching for it. She's going out looking for it. She seeketh wool and flax and worketh willingly with her hands. Now, what was wool and what was flax used for? They were used for making thread or yarn. So in order to sew clothes and garments, as you'll see elsewhere in this chapter, her hands take hold of the spindle and the distaff. So she's spinning her own yarn. Now, most of us have life much easier than that. I'm so thankful. And by the way, this passage doesn't mean in order to be a virtuous woman, you need to go back and do things the old-fashioned way, that you have to spin your old yarn. I think that's one of the greatest mistakes people make in reading the Bible, is they forget the principle of biblical interpretation called cultural transposition. And that simply means that you transpose a principle from culture into what it would be interpreted today. For instance, you know, the Bible talked about calling for the elders of the church when you're sick, and they will anoint you with oil. And the prayer of faith shall save the sick, you know, anointing with oil. Well, there are preachers that carry around a little oil phial in their pocket and say, "Well, that's my holy oil, and I'm going to anoint people that are sick." That's not the thought at all. Did you know back in that day, they didn't have medical doctors on every corner? And what he means is applying oil, which had a medicinal value. You know, parents used to give their children castor oil, right? But it had a medicinal value and a psychological effect too. I mean, it helped in more ways than one. But, you know, many people would take olive oil, or they would take coconut oil, or they would take other kinds of oil. In fact, there's a whole cottage industry today called essential oils that is taking from this old idea of using oil for its medicinal value. Well, what he meant is that they didn't have doctors around, but when the preacher went to visit sick folks, he not only needed to pray for them, minister to them spiritually, but he could massage in a little oil. Somebody, he goes to see brother so-and-so and he says, "I've got this bad shoulder, preacher." And the preacher says, "Well, let me tell you, I've got this liniment here that has helped me." And because the preacher traveled around a bit, he would no doubt have more exposure to potential remedies than other people. So he would administer both spiritual and medical assistance back in that day. That's the principle of cultural transposition. He means take the principle and apply it today. He doesn't mean we need to anoint with oil today. He means that when you go visit somebody that's in need, you pray for them, but also encourage them to seek out the medical remedies. That's how the principle transposes to popular culture today. Well, the same is true here in Proverbs 31, when it says that this virtuous woman seeks wool and flax and works willingly with her hands. It doesn't mean that if you want to be a virtuous woman that you've got to go spin your own yarn. or bake your own bread. Somebody says, okay, we're going to go back to basics. We're going to live like Alaskan bush people. You know, we're going back to nature, and we're going to reject all modern machinery and modern contraptions and technology, and we're going to go back doing things the old-fashioned way. Well, if you like to do that, more power to you. I'd rather use a microwave oven, or I'd rather use a recipe out of a box, you know, than having to grind my own corn and grain. But if you like that, if that's what floats your boat, go for it. The principle needs to be transposed. The principle is she looks for things, and she's frugal. She's industrious. She looks for things that would help her family. She's hardworking. She seeketh wool and flax and works willingly with her hands. She's not lazy and indolent. She's industrious. She's not wasteful. I want you to notice verse 16 also. She considers a field and buyeth it. With the fruit of her hand, she planteth a vineyard. So she's either going to raise olives or grapes. She's into viticulture. This woman has bought a field. Now notice, she's the wife. There's no hint here that she is handcuffed and being micromanaged by an insecure husband. There's not a hint in the world that she is kept in a pumpkin shell and kept very well and never allowed to do anything or go anywhere. This woman considers a field and she makes an investment. You say, where did she get the money to do that? She's been saving for a while. If you look at all of the cottage industry crafts and things that she's made through this chapter, I'm telling you that she is very frugal. She's saving money. There comes a day when she says, there's a field available, and I've got this money saved up. I'm going to make this investment, buy some real estate. She makes the decision apparently unilaterally, and she does it so that she can build a vineyard, plant a vineyard, and make even more money to help her family. Sounds like you say, oh yes, this is the feminist woman. I'm telling you, this is the very opposite of feminism, because she's not doing it for herself. She's doing it for her husband, for her children, for her family. She's living not for her own self-fulfillment, but she's living in order to further the cause of the home. You say, Brother Mike, why is she so industrious? Because she fears God. Did you know a person who fears the Lord is going to be more hardworking as a rule? If God is real in your life, it's going to influence how you do your job. She's not lazy and wasteful. Verses 18 and 19 says, she perceiveth that her merchandise is good. Her candle goeth not out by night. She layeth her hands to the spindle, and her hands hold the distaff. Now, she even works late into the night. Her candle goeth not out by night. Verse 24 says, she maketh fine linen and selleth it. She's not only the manufacturer, but she's the marketer. She makes it, then she sells it, and then she's the delivery girl and delivereth girdles unto the merchant. Man, I'll tell you, this is a virtuous woman. She's hardworking. She's frugal. She's thoughtful. She's wise. She's industrious. She's not wasteful. And she hasn't been beaten down by a husband who doesn't trust her. In fact, she's trustworthy. The heart of her husband, says verse number 11, doth safely trust in her. There is something about her character, my friends, that has won his confidence and his trust. There are other virtues here. She's health conscious and very feminine. Look at verse 17. She girdeth her loins with strength. Do you know what her loins are? The midsection. She has chiseled abs. She girdeth her loins with strength, and she strengtheneth her arms. I'm telling you, this woman is intense on keeping herself fit and feminine. You say, oh, she's concerned that others will think she's... No, she's doing it for her husband. She's doing it because she's health conscious. She's concerned to keep herself healthy for her family, for her husband. Look at verse 22. She maketh herself coverings of tapestry. She's not wearing crocker sack, burlap dresses. Now, there's nothing wrong with that if that's all you have. But she cares about being feminine. She's not one of these masculine women who says, I'm going to prove that I'm just as strong as the menfolk and that I can do what they can do. And she's content to be the person God made her to be. See, Brother Mike, you know, this isn't popular today to preach the things that you're preaching this morning. It's biblical, isn't it? And the reason that it's not popular is because our culture has become so antagonistic to the things of God. This woman is feminine, and her clothing is silk and purple, Look at verse 24. She makes fine linen and selleth it. Strength and honor are her clothing, says verse 25. And she shall rejoice in time to come. You know why she's so concerned about her health and her femininity? Because she fears God. All of these other virtues can be explained in terms of the principal virtue, her fear of God. Furthermore, she's compassionate and generous to the poor and the needy. Verse 20, she stretcheth out her hand to the poor. Yea, she reacheth forth her hands to the needy. She cares about others and she makes efforts. She doesn't wait for them to seek her out, but she's looking for areas in which to minister. And then finally, she's wise and gentle in her words. I love verse 26. She opened her mouth with wisdom, and in her tongue is the law of kindness. She's not mean-spirited and bitter and angry. In her tongue is the law of kindness. I know it's easy when a mother has little ones around to lose your cool and lose your temper and to resort to screaming and yelling and put downs and criticism, perpetual criticism. And that's true for a father as well. I want to say, my friends, here's what it means to be virtuous, to have the law of kindness in your tongue. To be encouraging, to be gentle, to be loving, to be kind. Oh, how we need that in our homes and in our popular culture. And you say, Brother Mike, why is she wise and gentle in her words? Why is she compassionate to the poor and needy? Why is she so hardworking and industrious? Why is she so feminine and concerned to be healthy? Because she fears the Lord. All of these other virtues in Proverbs 31 may be explained in terms of this ultimate virtue, her fear of God. Now, that's her principal virtue. Look at her primary orientation in life. Her primary orientation in life is not her own career. Not that it's wrong to have a career. I mean, this woman's very busy, isn't she? She's industrious. She's frugal. She's wise. She's economic. This virtuous woman in Proverbs 31 is not a prisoner to her husband, but she's very well traveled. She's like the merchant ships that brings her food from afar. But I'll tell you, her primary orientation in life is not herself, her own reputation, her own identity, her own self-fulfillment. It's her home and her family. Her one priority is her home. Here's a verse earlier in the book of Proverbs. Proverbs 14, verse 1, listen to this. Every wise woman buildeth her house, but a foolish woman plucks it down with her hands. Now, as you go through Proverbs, you're going to find different kinds of men. You're going to find the foolish man and the wise man. You're going to find the just man. You're going to find the wicked man. And you're going to find different kinds of women in this book. You're going to find the strange woman. You're going to find the wise woman. And here he says, every wise woman is in construction. Every wise woman builds her house. What does that mean? That means her primary focus of attention is the stability and strength and health of her home. That's her primary investment. And the foolish woman plucks it down with her hands. We've heard stories of, well, you've heard stories of menfolk doing this too, but we've heard stories of women folk who would leave the house. They've strayed from family and left their family. And my friends, I want to tell you that that's not building the house, building the home. That's tearing it down with your hands. We've heard of women that said, I want to find myself. I've got my career. I want to be independent of my home and family. I'm going for my own self-fulfillment. My beloved, that's not building the house. That's tearing it down or destroying it by being focused on self. The biggest enemy that you have and that I have this morning, my beloved, is hole number one. Did you know that? Self. And the easiest way to rip apart a relationship that's supposed to be one flesh is when any one of those parties decides that I want to be a lone ranger. I want to pursue my own goals, my own life. Oh, to be a team and to be a family unit. That's the greatest joy in life. And that's what this woman in Proverbs 31 does. Her primary orientation is her home. She's lovingly loyal to her husband. Listen to verses 11 and 12. The heart of her husband doth safely trust in her. Now that says as much about her as it does about him. You say, oh, if he doesn't trust her, that means that he's got a problem with jealousy. Well, that could be, but it could be that she's not trustworthy. You know, trust is based on evidence. One of my preacher friends told me one time he preached at a church and he had to make a preaching trip the next week, and deacon walked out with him to his car, you know, after the service, and he said they'd given me $10 or so in my pocket, and he said I knew that they probably could have done better, but he said that that's what they'd given me. And he said, the deacon said, "You mean you've got to travel and preach? You've got to drive three states away this week on those bald tires that you've got?" "Brother, yes, sir, I'm really worried about it." He said, "Well, you need to trust the Lord, brother." He said, "I don't see much evidence on which to base that trust." Faith is based on evidence, you know? Faith is based on evidence. And this woman is trustworthy. That's why the heart of her husband safely trusts in her, so that he shall have no need of spoil. He trusts in her not only so far as her loyalty to the marriage vows are concerned, but he trusts in her so far as her economic wisdom. He's not worried about her doing anything to undermine the family, so that he shall have no need of spoil. She will do him good and not evil all the days of her life. I'll tell you, my beloved, that she is his helper. And that's her primary orientation. She's lovingly loyal to him. Verse 23 says, her husband is known in the gates. You know where the gates, what the gates of the city were? That's the place where they transacted city business, city affairs. Local government took place in the gates of the city back in the ancient world. And her husband is known in the gates. And that says as much about her as it does about him. He's known in the gates because her reputation has built his up. When he sitteth among the elders of the land, they recognize him because he has such a wonderful helper in her. Not only is she lovingly loyal to her husband, she's passionately devoted to her children and her household. Verses 14 and 15. She's like the merchant ships that brings her food from afar, says verse 14. She riseth also while it is yet night and giveth meat to her household. How many of you had mothers that got up before the crack of dawn while it's still dark outside and went and milked cows or gathered eggs or started a fire? You say, "Brother Mike, that generation is gone for the most part." I still know some hardworking sisters out here who get up early. That's not wrong to sleep late or to get a little rest. There's nothing wrong with napping. We're not legalists here. Nobody's judging anybody. I'm not judging you. I'm not trying to make you feel like you've fallen short of perfection. What I am saying, though, my friends, is here's a lady that's so committed to others that she's willing to deny herself, and that's what love really looks like. That's love, self-sacrifice. She riseth while it is yet night to prepare food for her household and a portion for her maidens. She is lovingly loyal to her husband. She's passionately devoted to her children. Verse 21 says, she's not afraid of the snow for her household, for all her household is clothed with scarlet. She makes the clothes for her children. She makes sure that they are warm. Verse 27, I love this. She looketh well to the ways of her household. She is constantly surveilling ways that she might take care of her kids, and eateth not the bread of idleness. Yes, my friends, most of us menfolk don't notice when the kids' shoes are getting too small, do we? Most of us don't notice when the coat that they've worn for the last 3 years is now they've outgrown it and it has holes all in it. You know, we don't notice stuff like that, do we? We say, "Oh, that's good enough." Back in my day, I used to not wear a coat, you know. You know, that's the way most menfolk are. Aren't you glad there's a godly mother somewhere who is passionately devoted to her children's well-being? I'm so thankful for these kinds of people, my beloved. She's a keeper at home. You said, "Oh, wait, Brother Mike, that's a New Testament expression, a keeper at home. I thought you just said that she was buying real estate and she was selling linen and she was traveling to bring her food from afar. And what do you mean she's a keeper at home?" Did you know that verse from the New Testament in Timothy's letter doesn't mean that she's a stayer at home? It means she's a homekeeper. She's focused on the home is her castle. The home is the nucleus of life, and she's the one that makes it strong. And my beloved, strong homes make strong churches. Did you know that? And strong churches make a strong country. Do you know why we've got problems in our country today? Because our churches are weak. Why are our churches weak? Because our homes are falling apart. and to get back to basics and to do things the biblical way is so crucial. This godly, virtuous woman doesn't selfishly seek fulfillment apart from her home and family. This is the very opposite or antithesis of modern secular feminism. And then I want to show you this morning as we close her priceless reward. We've talked about her principal virtue. She's God-fearing. All of the other things, she's industrious, she's compassionate to the needy. All of these other things are defined in terms of this umbrella concept that she's a woman who fears the Lord. We've talked about her primary orientation in life. She's not interested in herself or in money or in her career or in her figure or just for the sake of promoting herself, but she's interested in her family, her husband, her children, her home, my beloved, is the focus of all of her efforts. Let's talk about her reward. You say, oh, somebody like that is really being held down. They're being restricted from enjoying their personal potential. No, my beloved, this woman has a tremendous reward. Listen to this in verse 28. Her children rise up and call her blessed. Isn't it a happy day when your kids finally realize what you've done for them? And it takes a long time, doesn't it? I haven't been as grateful as I should have been to my parents. I'm trying to do better as I get older. And you just hope that they'll live long enough to where you can tell them how much you love them and how much you appreciate all they've done. But you know, when I was a young person, I didn't realize all the sacrifices mom and dad made. I didn't realize the sleepless nights, the many prayers they offered, the many nights turning on their bed worried about me because of some attitude or some friend that I'd made that wasn't good for me. And I'm so thankful now to think back about the impact they played in my life. You say, oh, you must have had a perfect father and a perfect mother. No, sir. I sure didn't. They're sinners like the rest of us. They made their mistakes. I had good ones, but they weren't perfect. But I'll tell you, my friends, I do believe this today, that they were godly. They loved me. You say, I didn't have that, preacher. Well, you've got a heavenly father who'll never fail you, right? We've got Jerusalem above, which is the mother of us all. So there's a godly mother in the church. But you say, Brother Micah, what is the reward of a person who sacrifices for others like a parent does for a child? Here's your reward. Her children will rise up one day and call you blessed. It may be at your funeral. It may be in a card that you receive on a special occasion like this, Mother's Day. But there will be an acknowledgement, a recognition that this woman played an integral role in the person I am today. This man made an investment in me that I believe, had she not done that, I wouldn't be the person I am today. Her children rise up and call her blessed, her husband also. And he praiseth her. Now, the word praiseth doesn't mean worships. It means he speaks well of her. I love this. Many daughters have done virtuously, but thou excellest them all. I've heard a number of you brethren say, I've got the best wife in the world, and I have to disagree with you. But you have the right to say it. You have the right to be wrong. But I think it's sweet. It's wonderful when these brethren say, I'm so thankful for my wife. Now, you know her faults probably as well as she knows your faults, right? And you say, she's not perfect, but aren't you thankful that if you've got a godly, virtuous wife, wouldn't you say many daughters have done virtuously, but thou excellest them all. And you find somebody that'll stick with you and somebody that'll minister to you and somebody that'll love you even in your unlovable moment. Somebody that'll be patient with you when the rest of the world would have washed their hands of you a long time ago. I'm telling you, that's somebody that deserves to be celebrated and praised. Thou excellest them all. Look at verse 31. Give her the fruit of her hands. May she enjoy some of the fruits of her labors and let her own works praise her in the gates. Now, her influence has spread beyond the home now, even to the city gates. Not because she's gone out and advertised it, but because she's a person of character and God has blessed her to have an impact beyond her own little circle of influence. She's virtuous, and everything else that includes, such as she's productive, she's kind, she's wise, she's loving, she's faithful and inwardly fulfilled and happy because she's a God-fearing woman. She's satisfied to live the life and fill the role that God has prescribed for her. That's true beauty, my beloved. And it's lovelier than a precious gem. It's more valuable than diamonds and rubies. That is God's ideal for womanhood, and it's a happy life. It really is. Try it. It's happier than rebellion against Him.